Okay, hello and welcome to Hanging On With Bob, a podcast hosted by me, Bob at Home. Thanks for joining us and let's get started. Well, I'm really looking forward to this podcast. My guest today is John Lawrence, my friend from Northeast Minneapolis. John has been a guest on a couple other podcasts. Both John and I share a love for Minnesota sports teams, and today our focus will be on the 1987 Minnesota Twins and their run to a World Series championship. John, welcome back for another episode of Hanging Out with Bob.
Yeah, good morning.
First of all, John, where were you in 1987? Were you in school? Were you working? Both?
Actually both. I was in college at the time, and then also working full-time pretty much, paying my way through college.
That was at Minnesota State Mankato?
That was before 87. Yeah. I think I started at Minnesota State in 87. Part of the season, was before Minnesota State, and the very end was while I was at Minnesota State.
Okay, yep. And in 87, I was working at Prudential. I was in that office. It was my eighth year with the company. I said that office that was on 394 on the west end of Minneapolis, the original Prudential building.
Right.
And that summer, when we were following the Twins, we moved to the building that was at 494 and Bass Lake Road in Plymouth.
Okay.
So that was a memorable summer in a lot of ways. And it was a year before my daughter was born. I mean, it's that long ago. Yeah. So, okay, well, John, I know you're a huge Twins fan and a fan of Major League Baseball, just like me. But what were you expecting of the Twins going into that 87 season?
86 was a disappointment. I was pretty excited about the Twins. You know, they had that young core that came up, and the 84 season when they made a run, I think they probably were leading the division into August, and then they kind of had a little bit of a downturn there at the end of the year. But from that point forward, I was expecting big things from the team. I remember in 85, I was out golfing at Theodore Worth by myself, and a guy came along, and we decided to golf together, and he was from New York, and he was in Minnesota he was starring at the Guthrie Theater in a play. And so we were both baseball fans, and he was a big Mets fan, and I said, I wouldn't be surprised if the Twins and Mets are in a World Series down the road against each other. Wow. And the Mets were in the 86 World Series champions the next year, and the following year the Twins were World champions, that was a bit prophetic.
Yeah, I remember I wasn't really all that optimistic at the start of the 87 season, because it was the year before in 86 where they had a record of 71-91. They were 20 games below 500. I think there were 21 games behind California, the Angels, which won the division that year. And even that year at the Metrodome, their attendance was 1.26 million, which was only it was the second lowest in the American League behind Seattle. So it was hard to get excited. I think we got kind of excited, like I said, in 84.
Right.
And it's like, are these guys ever going to do it? You know, what's going on? But then, as Gomer Pyle would say, surprise, 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 because they had a magical season in 1987. Yes. And how magical? Well, they won the World Series.
Right.
They beat the Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals, 4-3. And all four of the Twins' wins came at home at the Metrodome. It was the 27th season for the Twins franchise in Minnesota, their sixth season at the Metrodome. And overall, it was the 87th season as a franchise in the American League. I had to look this all up. I didn't have memorized. Of course, their first World Series championship was in Washington, D.C. Now, here's a baseball question for you, John. Do you remember what year the Washington Senators won their World Series?
It was in the Babe Ruth era, I know. That was in the 20s, for sure.
Yep, you're definitely in the ballpark, so to speak. It was 1924.
Okay.
The Roaring Twenties.
All right.
Calvin Coolidge was president.
Nice.
Prohibition, the nationwide ban on alcohol, had been in effect for nearly 5 years. Can you name at least one player from that 24 Senators team?
Oh, I would guess Walter Johnson.
Yep, that's the only one I can think of, too. And for the benefit of our listeners, Walter Johnson was a pitcher, and he was one of the first five players elected to the Baseball Hall of Fame. We're doing a little sidebar here, John. Can you think of any other of those players that made the Hall? There were five players. They called them the Five Immortals.
Oh, okay.
That's a good trivia question for baseball fans, but see how many you can guess out of that five. You got one already, Walter Johnson.
Ty Cobb, I would guess. Let's see. So you gotta come up with guys that were already retired for several years.
Well, you got
maybe. I don't know. That would have been probably too early for Gehrig. Honus Wagner, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yep, you've got three of the five. There's two others you need to guess.
Cy Young?
No.
Okay.
That's not one.
That's
okay. You got 60%, which is pretty good. The other two, okay, we'll say it again. Walter Johnson, who was a pitcher. Ty Cobb, who played center field. Honus Wagner was a shortstop. But then you've also got a pitcher named Christy Mathewson. And then the other one, probably maybe the most famous baseball name of all time, Babe Ruth.
Oh,
he actually was with that group.
Okay.
The Babe, the Bambino,
the
Sultan of SWAT, they called him. But anyway, the Twins started out as the Senators, for the benefit of people that might not have known that. So, okay, well, back to the 87 season, that incredible Twin season. Now, I know that you, in previous podcasts, you talked about you'd gone to the Metrodome a lot to watch baseball. That year in 87, did you see a lot of games?
I did, and I got one of my kind of personal traditions was to go to the first series of the year, but never the first game of the year.
Oh, yeah.
So I like to get an early glimpse of the team, and I happened to go to the second game of the season that year. It was a matinee game.
Mm-hmm.
I was working evenings, there was this new player for the Twins named Dan Gladden. Mm-hmm. And so they were playing a tight game with Oakland. Actually, they were behind most of the game, and Gladden wasn't in the regular lineup that day, but in the ninth, they had a big rally, and a lesser hitter, catcher, was coming up. And I think the bases might have been loaded, or two runners in scoring position for sure. And they brought in Dan Gladden as a pinch hitter, and he delivered a game-winning, two RBI base hit.
Nice.
to walk off. And there was just something about, he was, he'd only been in Minnesota for 10 days at the time, because they didn't trade for him until the very end of spring training.
Right.
And so here is this, super fiery guy, and his personality came shining through right then and there.
Yeah, he played hard, yeah.
So that was, got the juices flowing for this might be a little different kind of year.
So you saw a lot of games there because you just had a feeling something was going on with this team.
Yeah, I did. So. Yeah. I went to a lot of matinee games occasionally. I was working evenings, so, I like to go to afternoon games.
Full disclosure, John, I actually didn't go to a single Twins game that year.
No kidding.
But I did follow the team very closely, both on TV, because it was still free, on the radio.
Right.
And then, like most people then, I took the newspaper. I got the Star Tribune, and I would read that, every day for look at the box scores and the standings, and they had some good beat writers. It just was something I always looked forward to, so.
Yeah, I was the same exact way.
Yeah.
Consume as much Twins as I could in every media possible, and then went to some ball games.
Yep. Got another sidebar, John. Do you remember who the Twins TV and radio announcers were in 87?
In 87? Well, so let's see. I think Was that Gordon's first year?
It was.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Touch them all.
Yes, exactly. So it was Herb Carneal and John Gordon on the radio.
They were on the radio. And then how about TV?
Two completely contrasting styles, by the way.
Yeah, right. Herb is just real matter-of-fact, straightforward. No gimmicks.
Yeah, exactly. Mr. Smooth. Guy from Virginia, I think he was a kind of a crooner type voice, and then John Gordon was just
real excited,
noising, greedy.
Touch them all.
Yes, exactly. let's see. Television, would Killebrew have been an analyst?
Yeah. You got one from the legendary Twins Hall of Famer Harmon Killebrew. But there was another guy. He was just a straight ahead announcer. He wasn't like a former major leaguer. I'll be impressed if you can guess, because he was only here for a year.
Yeah, the guy from John Miller, maybe?
You get the first name right. It was John Rooney.
John Rooney, okay.
And he was here for a year, and then he went to the White Sox.
Yep.
And he stayed there long enough till the White Sox won the World Series, which would have been 2005, I think.
2005.
And then the next year, he went to the St. Louis Cardinals, and they won the World Series.
Wow.
He's the only, I don't know where I read this, but he's the only TV announcer for baseball that went... that announced for two different teams that won the World Series, you know, consecutive.
He was the Don Baylor of announcers.
Yeah, really. But he's been with St. Louis now for like, this is his 20th year.
Okay.
So that's, he's from Missouri himself, so he's kind of a legend there.
Yep.
So those were the announcers. Okay, I love these sidebars anyway.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Twins in 1987 season. Just some facts to get out of the way. They won the American League West that year. They finished two games ahead of the Royals, Kansas City Royals. They faced Detroit in the American League Championship Series, and they beat the Tigers in five games to win the pennant, their first since 1965. And in that series, the Twins won their first two games at home against the Tigers. They lost the third game. It was a Saturday afternoon game in Detroit. Close game, but they lost. But then they bounced back and won games 4 and 5. So they won the pennant. And then, again, they played the Cardinals in the World Series. Like they did with Detroit, they won the first two games at home. But then they lost all three at St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people were starting to think, oh, here we go, you know. But they managed to come back and within the safe confines of the Metrodome and won games 6 and 7.
Right.
Those are the facts of what happened in 87, you know, the division, the pennant, the World Series, and so on. And for fans like you and me and millions of other Twins fans, you know, we were just starving for some kind of championship, so we were happy with that. That was all good stuff. But baseball, it's a long season, 162 games regular season, plus the playoffs, if your team is good enough to get to it. And what I wanted to focus on in this podcast, John, are some of the significant events or highlights that helped make the 87 season so magical. I'm going to list by some dates. If you can kind of guess when I give a date, fine, go ahead and blurt it out. And feel free to comment to what I've listed as what I consider like some major highlights of the season. So the first one is September 12th, 1986.
Oh, that would be Tom Kelly becoming manager.
You are right. The Twins were having a bad year. And on the September 12th, they fired Ray Miller, the manager. And they made Kelly the interim manager. Correct. Interim manager. He was only 36, but he got that job as interim. And then, as we all know, it was upgraded to permanent manager for 87. Carl Pohlad took a chance on him. He's a good baseball guy. He knows baseball. And so he was at 36. He became the manager of the Twins. And I think he definitely proved he was ready to lead a team, too, from the get-go.
Right. You might not have remembered Tom Kelly as a baseball player. He was...
barely. Was he in the Twins system?
He played for the Twins for maybe one September in the... I think he succeeded Craig Cusick as kind of backup first baseman type. You know, so it would have been in the early 80s.
Okay.
You know, as Killebrew was probably still with the Twins at the time, and he was, you know, probably carrying around Killebrew's equipment bag. Because I think he was managed by Gene Mock, so a little bit of an influence there as well.
Yeah.
So I remember him as a ball player, and
he was a lefty too, right?
Because he
pitched batting practice. You know, he'd throw left-handed, he had a cigar all the time. He had a cigar in his mouth.
Right.
Crazy. Even though you couldn't smoke in the Metrodome, he had a cigar in his mouth. Okay, the next highlight, or should I say harbinger, October 5th, 1986. This is kind of obscure, but I think it's interesting what happened on that day.
Boy, that would have been right after the season, so yeah, I'm not sure.
You're very close. The Twins had just finished the 1986 season in sixth place in the American League West. But after that final game, it must have been a kind of a fan appreciation thing or something, because pitcher Burt Blyleven, he told the Metrodome crowd that day, he said, if the Twins can come back together or come together as a unit in 1987, he said, quote, hopefully we can bring a World Series to Minnesota,
wow,
unquote. I said, man, that's crystal ball there, Burt. Pretty good guess or prediction, I guess. So I just thought it was interesting. He said, you know,
right,
If we can play like we're capable of playing, maybe we can bring a World Series back.
Right. Yeah, and you think about it, in retrospect, all of their young, really talented players were coming together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tom Kelly was the right manager for that group.
Mm-hmm.
But all of those guys were entering their prime.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They'd made their mistakes as young players, but you could definitely see the talent.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, and so the makings of the 87 team were definitely there.
Yep,
right?
Yep.
They needed a little more.
Yeah, yep. And we'll be getting to that along here, too. Okay, the next important date or highlight, November 24th, 1986. We're still in 86, but these are all big events. November 24th, 1986.
They must have acquired a player, but I'm not sure which one.
Not a player, but... You remember Andy McPhail?
Oh, yeah. He was
promoted to executive vice president of baseball operations for the Twins.
The young genius.
Yeah, executive vice president of baseball operations is a very nice title. Basically, he was a general manager. That's what it was. But he started the makeover of the Twins roster. And I think that was one of the better decisions Pohlad made.
For sure.
You know, in my research, I learned that Andy McPhail is exactly one day older than me.
Oh, no kidding.
He was born April 5th, 1953. Okay. I was born April 6th, 1953.
How about that?
And speaking of April 6th, there's a famous twin who has the same birthday as me. I think I've told this before, but I don't expect you to remember it. He, Burt Blyleven and I.
Oh, wow.
We have April 6th birthdays, but he's 2 years older. He was born in 51, but he had the same birthday. Well, I always remember when the Twins games were on TV and he was the commentator. If it happened to be his birthday, you wouldn't hear the end of it.
Oh, right.
He said, did I tell you it was my birthday today?
Birthday. Yes.
So, okay, the next highlight, this is kind of a fun one. December 10th, 1986. You know, it's football season, Christmas has come along. Well, that day, with the help from uniform models, Tom Bernanski and Ken Herbeck, Bruno and Herbie, the Twins unveiled their new pinstripe uniforms for the 1987 season, which I know you remember. And I bring that up only because the uniforms are quite a change from those beltless polyester uniforms, the white at home and the kind of a powder blue on the road that they'd had since the early 70s. And both the home and away uniforms were unique in that they both had pinstripes. Like, traditionally, home teams would sometimes wear white with their stripes, but the Twins' away uniforms also had pinstripes. And I don't believe that was very common, at least in the late 80s. And the jerseys, it was a nice change. The Twins' home jerseys had Twins across the front like they always did. Right. But the away ones had Minnesota, which they'd never done before. It was in all capital letters.
And then they also had... the M cap.
Yes. Instead of the TC,
they
had an M sound. It was a new look. What did you think of this uniform? I thought they looked really cool.
I was not a fan of the change of the cap. I love the TC cap. That was iconic. But the uniform was classier look, a better look. So, you took the good with the bad.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge uniform critic anyway, whatever.
Yeah, who's wearing the uniforms? Is that really what matters?
Yes,
can they play baseball? So, yep. Okay, next highlight. Finally into 1987. January 9th, 1987.
January 9th. I'm just going to take a wild guess. Trade with the Expos for Jeff Reardon.
That's coming up. But this one, January 9th. Relief pitcher Juan Berenguer signed with the Twins as a free agent.
Okay.
Senior smoke. El Gasolino.
Right.
I think he went by that a few times. Did you know, John, that Juan Berenguer was the first Panamanian pitcher to appear in postseason play?
No kidding.
And only the eighth Panamanian player to participate in the World Series.
Right. And Rod Carew was one of the others.
Yes, yes, yes. And I'm glad Juan Berenguer was pitching for the Twins and not against them. He was kind of a mean-looking dude. I mean, if you just hadn't seen him before, he was kind of husky.
Right.
And he had longish hair.
Yeah.
And he had a big mustache. And he would have been intimidating on the mound. If I had to go in the batter's box and had him looking at me, I think I would have been a little nervous. We mentioned he had a couple of nicknames, Senior Smoke and El Gasolino. But
yep.
I guess his teammates, do you remember what they called him?
No.
They called him Pancho Villa. Yeah, the Mexican Revolution.
I love it.
So, all right, next highlight, February 3rd, 1987.
All right.
You might want to go back to your previous answer.
Yeah, okay. Jeff Reardon.
Yes, that was Andy McPhail's first big deal or major trade. It was actually a six-player trade with the Expos. And a lot of names that I don't even remember. But anyhow, they got him.
We got Tom Nieto, too, I think, in that deal.
Tom Nieto, the catcher. And Reardon came in exchange for pitchers Neil Heaton.
Yeah, he was the best. He was the best player we gave up in that deal.
Yorkis Perez.
Yeah.
I don't remember. And then Alfredo Cardwood and catcher Jeff Reed. They must have.
Jeff Reed was a decent prospect.
Right.
And Heaton was actually a pretty good pitcher. He was what Tom Kelly always described as just good enough to lose. So he lost a lot of 3-2 type games for the Twins. So it was, he would pitch good, but they would lose. And
I'll tell you, with Reardon, though, with that thick, dark beard and the fastball, I mean, and he had great control. I mean, he didn't give up a lot of home runs. He just was great. And his nickname was the Terminator.
Yeah.
Sometimes they call him that. But, man, what an acquisition he turned out to be. I mean, he was
the perfect guy for that team.
Yep. It worked out perfectly. So.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Quite a good back end of the bullpen then.
Oh, yeah.
With Berenguer and Reardon.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. To talk about shutting teams down, they really did their job there. So, okay, the next date, and you mentioned this earlier, but I'm going to say March 31st, 1987.
Oh, yeah. That was Dan Gladden being acquired right at the end of spring training.
Yeah, yeah.
And just the perfect catalyst for, just what that team was missing.
Well, he was a Charlie Hustle type guy too. I mean, he played real hard, ran hard, never dogged it, never, loafed to first base on a grunt infield ball. He played aggressively in the outfield and he could hit the ball, he could hit for power, he could do everything. He was just a really good hard-nosed guy, and they were lucky to get a guy like him on the team. So.
And he fit in with the professionalism of a lot of the other ball players that they had, and he was about the right age, about the same age as the other emerging, talent that they had. So, he was a great fit.
Yeah. Yep,
and, an extra outfielder for the Giants. They had three really good outfielders, and he was the fourth, and he was, kind of blocked to play a lot in San Francisco, and they wanted some pitching, I think, we gave up for him, which didn't amount to anything.
Right. No, that was a great acquisition. So you've got Berenguer, Reardon, and Gladden.
Yes.
Those are pretty good pickups there.
And Al Newman, right?
you're right. I've forgotten about him, but he was on that team as well. I remember
that. He was one of the offseason acquisitions.
Yeah. Yep.
And
yep.
Again, not a star, but kind of a glue guy.
And it seemed like whenever they did put him in there, he wasn't hurting them. He wasn't committing errors. And he's just a good solid player. So, and the thing about Gladden, I think what's great, he's still part of the Twins.
Right.
He's been an announcer now for, I think he started in 2000.
Yeah,
he's just been a good, steady, he doesn't have a, Gordon always said touch him up, but I think Gladden just says, gone.
Yes.
Hit a lang ball, gone.
Yeah. If he says anything, sometimes he doesn't even tell you that.
Sometimes he forgets he's on radio.
Yes.
We can only hear him if he talks, but I'm glad he's around. It's just good to have him with the organization.
I like his brand a lot.
Okay, next date, April 7th, 1987.
Opening day?
Well, It was the day after my 34th birthday. I'm plugging my birthday. It's April 7th. It was their home opener at the Metrodome.
Okay.
And the Twins beat the Athletics 5-4. Herbeck hit a single in the bottom of the 10th inning. So it was a great way to start the season.
Yep. You know?
And you said that you actually went to the next day?
It wasn't the next day, but it was the next game.
Okay, so you were there for that series, that opening home series.
Yeah, even now, the first series of the year, typically there's an off day in the middle of the series.
Right, they always take the next day off,
But you didn't need it for weather.
Right, yeah.
But there was an off day in the middle of the week there. And so, I was at the second home game of the year.
Okay, yep. Well, they had a great start. Okay, the next date I'm going to give you, April 21st, 1987. That's okay. It's kind of obscure, but the only reason I bring it up is on that date, they had topped Seattle 6-1 to improve their record to 10-4. So they got to a hot start, playing 700 ball. But what surprised me, I guess, as I was reading this, is the Twins would actually go on to play just 500 ball between April 21st and the beginning of September. They were played 500. They got to a good start, but it was always enough just to keep them either at or near the top the whole season long. So, and when they were home, forget it. I mean, they were unbeatable at home.
And that part of that was a function of their pitching because they had two great starters, and then it was whatever they could scrape together for for the rest of the rotation.
Hope their relievers can stop them.
Yeah, my guess is when Blylevin and Viola pitched, they were probably about a 650 winning percentage or better. And
we had less striker than anybody else.
all the rest of the cast of characters are way under 500.
Right. Okay, the next important date, May 22nd, 1987. This was a game in which Frank Viola lost a pitcher's duel to the Detroit Tigers' Jack Morris, one of our own, St. Paul guy. That dropped Viola's record to 2-5. He started off kind of slow.
No kidding.
But Frankie would go on to post a 15-5 record the rest of the regular season. And then, of course, he was 3-1 in the postseason. So he really came on and had a great, great year and really came through when they needed him at the end. Remember his nickname that year?
Sweet Music.
It wasn't just that year, but what was it?
Sweet Music.
Yep. Frankie Sweet Music Viola. So
can still remember the banner.
Yep.
Some guy hung a banner in right field corner that said Frankie Sweet Music Viola.
Yep. Okay, next date, June 7th, 1987.
June 7th?
7th, early June of 87.
Don't know.
That's okay. Again, these are kind of obscure, but when you read them, you go, that's kind of cool. On that day, Andy McPhail, he tried to boost the Twins pitching staff a little bit. Like he said, they had the two good starters, but after that, they just needed help. They obtained a knuckleballer by the name of Joe Niekro.
probably replaced Steve Carlton.
Well, that's coming up later. They got him in a trade with the Yankees, and we'll get a little bit more on Joe Niekro in a bit, but did you know that in 1987, that they went to the World Series. Niekro set a major league record for waiting 20 and a half years since his debut to reach a World Series game.
Oh, wow.
That was like the longest anybody ever waited that actually made it to the majors. So Joe Niekro. I got more on Niekro coming here, too. July 14th, 1987. What usually happens in mid-July?
Yeah, that'd be the All-Star game.
Yep. Now, this didn't affect the Twins directly, but I just bring it up because Kirby Puckett was actually the only Twin in that All-Star game. He went 0-4. They lost in the National League 2-0, but it went 13 innings. It was a long game.
Okay.
Do you remember where that game was played?
Where?
Yeah. Mm. I'll be really impressed if you know this. I wouldn't have known.
Let's see. So it would have been an American League city.
Yeah.
Yankee Stadium?
Yeah, it's as good a guess as any. It was actually at Oakland, Alameda County Stadium.
All right.
Scoreless through 12 innings.
Okay.
Then a guy by you've heard of him, Tim Raines.
Tim Raines.
Played with the Expos.
The Rock.
Who are now the Washington Nationals, right?
Right.
But he had a two-run triple in the top of the 13th inning. And it was the National League's 14th win in the last 16 All-Star games. I remember growing up, the National League seemed to win every year. They just did. When it went. Well, it was a time when the All-Star game, they really took that game seriously.
Right.
I mean, nobody was just putting a half. They were going all out to win. And it meant a lot to the players to be able to brag and say, you know, right. our league's better than the others. They you know, Kirby Puckett stayed in the whole game. Right. You know, nowadays managers want to make sure everybody gets in, gets to do something. And, you know, they didn't have home run contests then or celebrity softball games. They just, you know, it was a baseball game. That's all that mattered.
The starting pitcher, I would guess, probably went five innings.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't have that with me here.
No, but especially in a scoreless game, you know, the starters used to stay in for, you know, multiple innings as opposed to these days when maybe two innings at most.
What was the year? I think it was in the 2000s, but they called a game. They just called it a tie because it went too long.
Yeah, tie.
It's like, no, that isn't right. Okay, next highlight, July 31st, 1987. You mentioned this player before, but... that's okay. That is when they got future Hall of Famer Steve Carlton in a trade from the Cleveland Indians.
Gotcha.
Only one of his 329 victories came with the Twins. Yeah. He got 241 of those with the Philadelphia Phillies. You know, they were just trying to shore up the pitching staff in any way they could.
He was pretty spent by then.
And
They were desperate to find something, but that wasn't it.
Right. Good for him, I guess. He hung around and he ended up collecting a ring, even though he wasn't on the postseason roster. He was there and, you know, just being part of the team. So he got to say, I won a World Series. So, okay, next highlight, August 3rd, 1987. This is a fun one. I remember this one really well.
August 3rd. I'm going to just take a guess. Don Baylor added to the team?
Not quite. We're getting there. This was on a Monday evening, August 3rd, 1987. In Anaheim. Knuckleball pitcher Joe Niekro was ejected from a game against the California Angels after being caught with a nail file, emery board, whatever, on the mound. He parlayed his notorious deed into worldwide fame. It included an appearance on Late Night with David Letterman.
I've seen that one.
Yep, I was watching it on YouTube just the other day. I remember, I just want to refresh my memory. He came out wearing a carpenter's apron, and he was carrying a power sander. This is while he was serving his suspension, for having that nail file. And I remember David Letterman asking Joe, he says, "So you're telling me that you did not doctor the ball that night?" To which Joe Niekro replied, "Do I look like a doctor?"
Very good.
Now, do you by any chance remember the name of the umpire who saw that nail file fall out of his pants pocket? It was a local angle.
Oh, okay. Then I'd guess Tim Cheetah.
Tim Cheetah of St. Paul. Yep. He was a graduate of Creighton High School.
Yep.
Later named Creighton Durham High School and University of St. Thomas. Mm-hmm. And he was a full-time major league ump from 1986 through 2012. So, yeah, Cheetah was an ump for a long time.
One of the better.
Yeah, he was. And I hear him on Barrero or that stuff from time to time just talking about baseball. So, yeah, it was Cheetah that actually got him.
Right. Future bartender Tim Cheetah.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Oh, next date. These are dates, actually.
Okay.
August 29th and 30th, 1987. Well, it was a Saturday and Sunday in Milwaukee. Kirby Puckett went 10 for 11 against the Brewers.
Oh, I remember.
And the Twins took over first place for good in the American League West after that weekend. They never once, you know, fell out of first place. It was kind of a momentous weekend for him, and the Twins is we're not giving this up. So
I remember where I was for those games. That was really something.
Yeah, 10 for 11. I mean, well, and here's a little quick sidebar. I remember that weekend because that night, I think it was Sunday night, but for some reason, Sid Hartman was on the radio. It might have been, couldn't have been recorded because it was the evening. He had Paul Molitor on as a guest. At that time, Molitor, who's also from St. Paul.
From Creighton High School.
Creighton High School, yep. And he was on talking to Sid because he was a close personal friend.
Right.
But he was asking Molitor about, you know, about Kirby Puckett. And, of course, Molitor, being the nice guy he was, said, yeah, Kirby's great. And, you know, he was fantastic this weekend against us and that kind of stuff. But Molitor, for those that don't follow the Twins that closely, the greatest years of his career weren't with the Twins, but he did play for the Twins.
Yep.
And then he went on to be manager of the Twins for, what, 5 or 6 years at least, 2015 to... Yeah. Oh, it's 2015 to 2018.
Yes.
And in 2017, he was manager of the year. So, but they went in a different direction, so he's not there. But Molitor is definitely part of the Twins' history. So, okay. All right, we'll go back to the 87 season again. Okay, September 1st, 1987. You mentioned this guy before.
All right. That must be Don Baylor.
That was Don Baylor. Don Baylor, of course, is a great DH. He's right. Probably best known for that. Played with a number of teams, but we got him in a trade from the Red Sox. That's who he came from. So
right.
He actually only hit one home run while he was with the Twins.
Okay.
But it was a pretty big home run. That was in the Game 6 against the Cardinals in the World Series.
Right.
What was your reaction when you heard that he was traded for Baylor? I remember my reaction. But what did you think when you...
Well... Baylor was definitely big reputation as a professional. He had been with the Red Sox the year before when they were in the World Series. He had been with the Angels when they were in the World Series.
Yep.
You know, and that was my joke of he's the Don Baylor of broadcasters because it was like no matter where this guy was, he shows up in the World Series. I just thought, here's a good ball player, added to the lineup that was already really good.
Yep. I remember thinking too, I says, I hope he's still got something left.
Right.
And he did. He actually helped the Twins a lot in that championship drive. He got in the World Series, he had 5 hits, 3 runs, that one home run,
yep.
And then he batted in 3 runs. So he really helped them out. And that was it. That was his, yep. And he was gone after the next year.
Did they add Smalley was on that team as well, but I think, I don't know if he was a late addition. I think he was not with the team in spring training.
No, they picked him up, and I think he got to play in the World Series, but it was kind of like, almost like a pinch hitter type thing. He wasn't starting.
Exactly,
So Smalley that's a good point. He got to be on the team at least, so he got a championship. So, okay, next important date. We're just about done. We're at September 27th, 1987.
Must have been when they clinched the American League West.
They clinched a tie that day. It was a Sunday afternoon. They beat Kansas City 8-1.
Yep.
Burt was pitching.
Yep.
And they won that game. Gave them a 56-25 home record. It's a 691. It's almost 700 ball at home. It was best in the majors.
Yep.
Now, did you happen to go to that game? Because I know you went to a lot of games that year, too.
No, I was not at the...
Okay. I wasn't either. I was actually golfing that afternoon.
Nice.
But then after the game, I think I was watching the TV in a bar or restaurant or something. It showed the highlights. But I was excited that they even clinched a tie, Now they're really close. And I remember watching the 6 o'clock news and the 9 o'clock news or 10 o'clock news just to see highlights of that game. Because it had been 17 years since on the verge of clinching anything. So it was definitely a big deal. So, and of course, since we're doing September 27th, we have to go to the next day, September 28th, 1987.
All right. So that must have been when they clinched the division.
Do you remember where the game was?
Texas?
Yes. Very good.
I knew it was Texas or Kansas City because they played the last two series in those two cities.
Yep.
And none of their regulars played.
They beat the Rangers 5-3 that Monday night to clinch a division title. It was their 29th road victory. Now, remember, I said above, they won 56 games at home. They won 29 games on the road. So they were definitely not road warriors. But they won that night, and they clinched a division title. So, and do you remember watching the game? I definitely watched it.
Yeah,
There was no way I was going to miss that. I think what I remember most or was cool about it was... Harmon Killebrew actually was announcing that bottom of the ninth.
Right.
And it was fun for him to, I think somebody hit a line drive to Lombardozzi or something like that. That clinched the division for them. And he was really happy for them about that. And do you remember after the game, they brought cameras into the locker room. And Harmon, and probably Rooney was there too, but I just remember Harmon was interviewing Kirby Puckett.
And I kind of vaguely do remember that.
It was cute because... Harmon Killebrew, for people that know him, was probably one of the nicest guys that ever lived. Yeah. Great baseball player, but just a gentle man. I mean, he wouldn't hurt a flea. But with his last name, Kirby Puckett kept calling him Killer.
Killer, right. He always called him Killer. Right.
But it was an affectionate sound, but it just sounded funny here.
Right.
Of all people, they call a Killer Harmon. He's the last guy. But that was a fun memory. Okay, the next date, we're going to go to October 7th, 1987. So... We're in the postseason, but what happened on that night? Or what do you think happened on that night?
Ooh, October 7th. So that would have been. And they wouldn't have won the ALCS yet. So they must have won. That must have been the first game of the ALCS.
Yep, that was game one. And the thing that I remember most about that was Gaetti homered in his first two at-bats.
Yes, two homers in that game.
Yes, yes.
He had a great series.
He did, he did. Well, I think he was MVP of the series.
Yeah, sounds right.
But they actually needed more because they needed they had a four-run rally in the eighth inning of that game, and they beat Detroit 8-5.
Okay.
I mean, well, Detroit, they were no slouches. I mean, they won 99 games or 98 games that year. They were good team. But it was a great start to the playoffs. And I just remember, I was only watching it on TV, but I remember just how noisy it was. I mean, it was a packed house. There were no cordoned off seats in the right field bleachers. Every seat that was available was sold and filled. And it was loud. Oh, man. Was there anything to the fact or anything to the rumor that Sparky Anderson actually got sick at that game, or it was so loud that, and maybe he was just worked up, but he actually like left the dugout and threw up or something? Because
I've never heard that.
Maybe that's just an urban myth, but I heard the noise got to the sparkler because it was so loud. Okay, and here's one of my favorite highlights of this whole podcast: October 11th, 1987.
That was probably the clinching game five of the series.
You're close. It was game four.
Okay.
Yeah. But do you remember probably the play of the game? Well, I'll tell you what my play of the game was that I remember. What inning was that now? Okay. Detroit was at bat.
Mm-hmm.
And remember Darrell Evans?
Darrell Evans.
He was on third base.
Okay.
Leading off. Anyhow, Laudner, the catcher, Tim Laudner, they did a pickoff attempt. He threw to Gaetti, and they nailed Evans at third base.
Right, yeah, that was a big play.
Because they were about to rally. I mean, if they had scored, who knows what would have happened.
Right.
But that thwarted the rally, and the Twins went on to a 5-3 win that night.
Yep. Yep.
And a huge 3-1 lead in the series. So that, to me, was probably the most... one of the most exciting plays of the whole playoffs because it came at just the right time.
Yeah.
And Laudner just threw a bullet. I mean, it was just a perfect throw.
Right.
And Evans was totally caught off guard by that. So that was a huge play. Okay. And then I'm kind of giving this away. October 12th, 1987.
Yes. Yeah, that would have been a day game in Detroit.
Yep. Yep.
I think Gaetti hit a home run in that game, I believe. And they won the ALCS that day. And then there was another occurrence that evening.
Yep, we're getting right to that. Just for the record, that score was 9-5. They won it decisively.
Yeah.
And Reardon was on the mound. He closed it out. But yeah, you're right. Just as memorable as that game itself was that evening.
Right.
Mind you, they're flying home from Detroit, which isn't that far away from the Twin Cities.
Right.
But you tell how you remember it.
Yeah. So they talked about after the game, they were in the post game, and there was going to be a flight back to the Twin Cities, and they were talking about meeting the team at the airport, and then somehow there was an announcement that there would actually open up the Metrodome for a reception, and me and my buddy said, "Yeah, we're going down there." Yeah, I did.
Oh, wow!
I did. It was free and open, and I didn't live too far from the Metrodome, and so me and my buddy went down there, and I remember walking probably 10 blocks to get to the Metrodome, and there we sat and watched as the team entered through the tunnel in the right field corner.
Yes, yes.
There was a garage door there, and that's where the team came through.
Yep.
The most memorable thing was Baron Guerin in his trench coat and his briefcase.
Who carries a briefcase?
Looking like the secret agent man.
What was in that briefcase? Well, and then were there 50,000 people?
Yes, it was packed and it was loud.
Oh,
it was just like, you know, the ALCS or the World Series. It was very loud. Maybe a half an hour total duration once the team got there. You know, there was a couple of, you know, people said a few things and whatever, and I think they might have introduced people and out on the mound, And then that was pretty much, you know.
I watched it on television. I don't know if it was WCCO or whatever, but a local channel. And I remember the two things I remember most about that were one, it showed Gary Gaetti, and he was actually crying.
Yeah.
I mean, well, it made it emotional for him. He was the MVP of the series.
Yep.
And just the fact that this was so spontaneous, too.
Yes, it was.
It wasn't planned weeks in advance.
Totally organic.
And I might be wrong, but I don't believe there was any kind of disturbances. I don't remember people, vandalizing the downtown.
Correct.
It was just a bunch of happy people.
Right, exactly.
Just
right.
Excited.
It was a feel-good event.
Yeah.
And, there was... Yeah, it was great.
And I remember, the other thing I remember was Herb Carneal spoke. You know, he was the longtime announcer for the Twins. And
right.
I remember he was saving this, I could tell, but he said, you know, nobody better overlook the Twins. He goes, to overlook the Twins, it would be either a giant mistake or a cardinal sin.
Because
they knew it was going to be either the Giants or the Cardinals in the World Series. But Herb came up with that. So that was a good one. I'm impressed that you were at that celebration. I remember watching it and thinking, I would have liked to have been there. So, okay, we're just about through our highlights here. But let's go to the next one. October 17th, 1987.
That was 17th, probably would have been Game 1.
Game 1, yep. Yep, and the Twins won big, 10-1.
Yep.
Viola, here's the story that I get to kick out. Remember the thing with Viola? He had a brother that was supposed to get married that day.
Viola
was supposed to be best man. And Frank said, you know, I think his brother's name is John. He goes, John,
yes.
I'm kind of busy. You know, I got to pitch in the World Series. Will you ever forgive me?
Right.
And, his brother got married and Viola went on to win. And I'm sure everything worked out fine. But I remember that was an angle they were playing. He was supposed to be at his brother's wedding and he's pitching in the World Series instead. So. And I remember one of the most exciting plays of that game was Gladden hit a grand slam.
Yes.
It was in the fourth inning. He scored 7 runs.
Yes.
It was a 10-1 win. It got 7 runs. So
Big rally.
It was a big, big game. So, okay. Now we're going to jump ahead here, the next highlight at least. October 24th, 1987.
All right. So that's a week later. That's probably Game 6.
Mm-hmm.
That's speaking of grand slams.
Mm-hmm.
We got to from my seat in the upper deck.
Oh, you were at that game,
right field. Oh. I watched Kent Herbeck's imitation of an airplane as he was rounding first base after hitting a grand slam. They started out losing that game.
Yes.
You know, and that was an elimination game.
I know.
And they were losing like 5-2 in the early innings, and we're like, oh, this isn't good.
Yeah,
and,
this isn't looking good. Yep.
And,
yep.
And there's Kent Herbeck hitting the grand slam, and Baylor hit a home run that inning as well, I believe.
His home run in the bottom of the fifth actually tied the game at 5-5.
Okay.
And then in the sixth, the Twins kind of blew the door open. That's when
Herbie
hit the grand slam. But yeah, it was. Well, it's funny about that, too. I was watching the game with my folks, actually, up in Columbia Heights. And as soon as that home run was hit, my brother Dave called me after Baylor's home run.
Okay.
Which only tied the game, but that was such a big deal to come back. He goes, Twins are going to win the World Series.
Yeah.
I go, well, I hope you're right, man. Well, it was encouraging to see them, blow them out in that game.
Right.
11-5, I think, was the final score. And then Game 7, of course. So.
Right.
And then, of course, the next highlight, October 25th, 1987.
Yes. Yeah. Also from my upper deck right field seat, I watched...
You went to both games?
Yeah.
Oh,
well, they sold them in pairs.
Okay.
I watched Herbeck throw his arms up in the air as they won their first ever World Series and first Minnesota championship since... The Lakers.
The Lakers.
Which nobody saw.
No. Nobody before the season was predicting the Twins in one of the World Series,
right.
I don't think.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Yeah. I was at a friend's house watching that game. There were about 10 of us at that game, just whooping it up. My folks were at that game. They actually went to the game.
Okay.
At that time in 87, my dad was 58 and my mom was 55. So they went to the game. They were on the third base side, down the third base line.
Yep.
And but they were at the game. And my dad, who was he was very stoic Swede, didn't show a lot of emotion, but he said that was something.
Yeah.
that was really something to be there. He goes, incredibly loud. But,
oh, it's very loud, yes.
Okay. All right. The next highlight, we've got just a couple more, John. October 28th, 1987.
28th. So I'm going to guess that was the parade?
The parade. Yep. Yeah, you got it. You got it.
I was there as well.
Downtown Minneapolis?
Yes.
Okay.
On Marquette Avenue, I believe it was, where I was perched and watched Kirby Puckett in his bomber hat.
Yep. The aviator helmet on. Yep. Well, it was a cold day. It was October 29th. Very windy, and the people are a lot of the players had their wives and girlfriends in the car. They were in convertibles, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they're exposed to the elements,
right.
But they're just sitting there freezing, probably.
Right.
But I know it wasn't the largest ever parade, but it was probably one of the most densely populated parades.
It was.
It's almost like the cars didn't have room to go down the street. I mean, it was just, and there was ticker tape, just like.
Right. And you know what the confetti was made out of?
No.
Shredded bills from the treasury, from the Federal Reserve. They handed out bags and bags of this shredded up money.
Oh, that's amazing. I did not know that.
Yeah.
But it was just like you picture ticker tape parade, just full of people and confetti flying all over the place, and it was just wild. I went to the parade, but I actually went with my brother, Dave, and my sister-in-law, Mary, and my then seven-month-old nephew, Luke.
Ah.
Now he's 38.
Yeah.
But we went to St. Paul.
Oh, okay.
We parked several blocks from where we stood. We actually stood at the bottom of the steps, basically, of the cathedral in St. Paul.
Oh, okay.
So the parade was coming from 94. That must have been a cold ride from Minneapolis.
Oh, no kidding.
But anyhow, they got off the freeway ramp, and then they were going down that hill. Is it Kellogg? I don't remember what that steep hill is.
Yeah.
But as they went past us at the cathedral, we saw every player was like from me to the end of my living room. We just waved at everybody. And I remember Puckett had that aviator.
Yeah.
Probably kept his ears warm because it was cold. It was cold. But man, what a blast.
It was just like the hat Rocky wore in Rocky
Bullwinkle. Yeah, Rocket the Flying Squirrel. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, God. But man, it was fun. Well, it was the first time we'd seen a championship since the Lakers. First in the second half of the 20th century, at least. So.
Right.
Okay, and then my last highlight here, October 29th, 1987, the day after.
Ooh, I don't know, a snowstorm.
No, actually, that's when they went to the White House in Reagan.
Okay, all right.
And they had a celebration for there.
Yeah.
It's amazing because now it seems like any Super Bowl team or World Series team, it's months, several months, but like 4 days later, they just went there and did it. So, and the thing that I remember the most about it was we talked about him earlier. Steve Carlton was with the group, and he had nothing to do with the postseason.
Yeah.
But he was there. He was the one that was wearing the sunglasses.
Oh, wow.
Okay. And what's funny is I can't remember if it's the Pioneer Press or the Star Tribune, but in the picture, he's standing with all these other Twins. They all had suits on, but Carlton's got the glasses, and the caption identified him as a Secret Service agent.
Very good.
Yeah, they didn't even realize it was Carlton.
Steve Carlton, secret agent man.
Oh, gosh, yeah. So, well, just a couple more takeaways, John, about this season, which was pretty amazing. You know, with only 85 wins in that regular season, the Twins won the World Series with, at that time, the fewest regular season wins since Major League Baseball expanded to 162 games.
Right.
In fact, that 85-win season was later surpassed in 2006 by the Cardinals. They won 83.
And then the Rangers, I think, when they won their World Series, I think they might have only won 82 or 81.
Well,
you know, that was like 10 years ago.
Right.
Around 2015.
I guess the lesson is all that really matters is how you play when it counts.
Well,
and when they got to the...
Their A team was much better than an 85-win team.
Yeah.
They gave up the last six games of the season. After they clinched, they had all their... They did not play to win.
Right.
And so that was a little bit misleading. And then, you know, if Viola or Blylevin was on the mound, they were as good as any team in baseball. And they proved that.
When they had to prove it, they did it. They had to do it. So the Twins also became the first team to win the World Series despite being outscored by their opponents in the regular season, having scored 786 runs and allowing 806 runs.
Right.
So they gave up 20 more runs than they scored. But again, all that matters is they won the division. They won when they had to. So Tom Kelly, TK, he became the fifth manager to win a World Series in his first full season on the job. And one of seven total as of 2023. There's been a few after that were first year, but he did in the first year. And then the Metrodome, as you know, we talked about how loud it was. I don't know what this really means, but they said the peak levels were measured at 125 decibels, which is the same as a jet engine or something. But all that really matters, it was loud.
Yeah, it certainly was.
So, is there any other takeaways you want to mention about that season, John?
Or? Well, you know, just my personal memory, you know, I loved that team before that season. You know, the guys coming up in the early 80s, you know, came up together and, you know, add Puckett to the mix in 84. And he was an infectious guy, very charismatic. But they grew up that season in a lot of ways. You know, Frank Viola was a great pitcher, but he was not... He was a fiery New York kind of guy, but when things didn't go well, he was not mature about it. So if they could get under his skin, he was not the same pitcher. But you could see glimpses of brilliance in that season. You know, he came to fruition as a ball player.
And
just what a fun group. You know, they were a blast. You know, the Herbeck and Gaiety tag team wrestlers. Speaking of wrestling... They had their wrestling pseudonyms, and
that's right. Yeah,
you know they would have wrestling matches in the locker room. You know, faux wrestling. You know,
Herbeck must have been a fun guy to have on a team too.
I think so.
He was just
what a life for Riley, hometown kid that you know, just a big lovable you know, goof that happens to also
be a great ball player.
and he. Throughout the early 80s, he was their best player.
He was,
you know, until, you know, even in Puckett's, you know, first couple of years, he was charismatic and energetic, but, you know, he hit like four home runs in two seasons, and then he got that leg kick in 86, and all of a sudden here came the power, and he became, you know, a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he led him into the Hall of Fame.
Up until that time, you know, it was Herbeck's team for sure. And then, you know, all the rest of the cast of characters came together.
Although I do still believe, well, it doesn't matter, but I still think that if Herbeck had stayed healthy and maybe worked a little harder, that he could have been a Hall of Famer.
He had
as good a glove as any first baseman ever had, and he had power. He's a good player.
Yeah,
I'm glad he played with the Twins, you know.
Right. Puckett and Blylevin were their only Hall of Famers from that team, other than, you know, the likes of Carlton and Baylor, who weren't the core of the team.
Right.
You know, they were just kind of garnishments at the time. But there were quite a few players in that team that were playing at a Hall of Fame level, and they just didn't have the longevity. But they were playing, you know, Hall of Fame caliber play for that stretch of time. And you know Greg Gagne, nobody ever mentions the guy. He's
great shirt stuff.
You know, he was Omar Vizquel without the name, or you know, Ozzie Smith without the cartwheels,
right?
You know.
Yeah, good point.
He got to every ball. He did it without flash. He was a Tom Kelly kind of guy.
And
the glue, the defensive glue, that team, one of the biggest underrated parts of that team was how good of a defensive team they were. They were very good. At every position. Not just up the middle, but their corner guys, Herbeck, great first baseman, Gaiety, a great third baseman, and
Bruno in right field, Gladden left, and Kirby,
a very professional right fielder with a big arm, and Gladden could outrun the ball, and Puckett in his younger days, and that was part of his younger days, he could really go get it in center field.
It's a great team, fun team. I'm glad we had him. I'm glad we can talk about it,
because
Well, when you think about it, 1987 now, again, this is 38 years now, I can't believe it. State of Minnesota had just three professional sports teams, right? We had the Twins, the Vikings, and the North Stars.
Right.
It would be another two seasons before the Wolves would even start playing. The Vikings had been 0-4 in the Super Bowl. They're still 0-4 in the Super Bowl.
Right.
And the North Stars had lost to the New York Islanders in the Stanley Cup Finals in 1981. So in 87, the Twins became the first Minnesota pro sports team in the second half of the 20th century to win the championship. And for fans of the Minnesota sports teams like you and me, that was huge. So
it was.
I was going to tell you one more quick thing about Joe Niekro. You know, like I said, it had been 20 and a half years from the time he debuted to get pitch in the World Series. He had one appearance in the World Series. I'd almost forgotten about this. It was game four. Twins lost 7-2. It was in St. Louis. He pitched the fifth and sixth innings, allowed one hit while striking out one and allowing no runs. So when he was there, he did a good job. So, do you remember the Twins released bobbleheads for all the players after the World Series?
I don't recall that. And I can imagine Joe Niekro.
Well, you can imagine his bobblehead, you know, in the back pocket. Little nail file.
Right. So exactly. You know, Joe Niekro reminds me of a Beatles joke. You know, Joe Niekro, his brother
Phil,
was a knuckleballer as well, and he was the better of the two brothers. Yeah. And you know, it was like when someone asked John Lennon if Ringo Starr was the greatest drummer in the world, and Lennon said he's not even the greatest drummer in the band. It's kind of the same thing. You know, Joe Niekro wasn't even the best pitcher in his family.
Well, thank God for the Minnesota Twins of 87. It gives us something to talk about 38 years later.
Right.
So this has been a blast, John. I'm glad we were able to get together. We could talk about this off the podcast too forever and not run out of stories.
Right.
So it's great. Thanks again for getting together with us. And again to our listeners, thanks for hanging out with me, Bob Edholm, and John Lawrence, my friend from Northeast Minneapolis. We hope to join us for the next episode of Hanging Out with Bob, wherever you listen to your podcasts. And until then, bye.